From the JPR Steve Nelson Performance Studio, welcome to another JPR Live Session. I'm Dave Jackson. Joining me today is singer-songwriter, multi-instrumentalist Lindsay Liu. She was the front woman of Lindsay Liu and the Flat Bellies and a member of a collaboration with May Erlewine and Rachel Davis, the Sweetwater Warblers. And her latest album is Queen of Time. Lindsay Liu, welcome to JPR.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having us.
It's good to have you here. I want to talk about Queen of Time and what inspired the themes on it, but you're on tour with a band. Tell us who's in the band and who came with you today, who you're working with.
Yeah. So we got Mimi Naja on mandolin and electric guitar, got Heather Gillis on bass, and Michelle Milo Pietrafita on drums.
Right. And give us a little bit of resume. I understand that Mimi was in or is in Fruition. Is that right?
Yes. I still am.
You still aren't great.
So I borrow Mimi from Fruition. Uh-huh. I borrow Michelle from Banshee Tree. Uh-huh. And I borrow Heather from Wolf Twin and the greater Nashville area. So Heather's in Nashville. She's originally from Florida. Michelle is in Denver, originally from New Jersey, the Northeast. And Mimi is in Atlanta, from Atlanta.
All right. Well, welcome all of you to JPR. How about starting off with the song? What do you guys want to play?
We're going to start off with the first track on Queen of Time. Every time I release a record, about two-thirds of it is songs that I've written or co-written. And I always include 2 to 4 songs also that were written by friends of mine in the scene, in the community, mm-hmm. people who have had an influence on me. Just been a part of my creative process, and this one just really frames the whole record so beautifully, and it was written by Maya Devitri and Phoebe Hunt, and it's called Nothing Else Matters.
All time, I don't need to
else matters. Yes, I love you, and nothing else matters.
That's Lindsay Liu with Nothing Else Matters. It's a lead-off track to the new album, Queen of Time. You can find music, merchandise, and a tour schedule at lindsayliumusic.com and all of that on social media platforms as well. It's just lindsayliumusic.com.
Yeah, but I think that even if you type in lindsayliu.com, it'll direct you
okay.
to me. So I'm easy to find.
Good deal. And you, so you moved to Nashville about 10 years ago, and you grew up in Michigan. Your family kind of helped spur your interest in music. Tell us about growing up and getting involved with that.
Yeah, so I grew up in a musical family. My mom was one of 12 children, and there was various iterations of family band throughout time. You know, it started with my grandpa, Buzz, was a trumpet player and sang, and my grandma was a crazy hippie, always had a bunch of young people around and sang gospel songs and everything. And So I saw my mom singing with her siblings, and then I saw the younger aunts and uncles singing with my older cousins, and then I was singing with my Auntie Melody actually taught me how to sing harmony with my cousin Harmony, and you can't make this stuff up.
Right.
You know, it's just... So that was a big influence on me. Even on my dad's side, my grandpa Pete played the accordion, and he used to play accordion for me to dance. So I started honing in on my being a ham from a young age, for sure.
And you started writing pretty early too, right?
Yeah, they had, my dad's folks had a piano in the basement, and, I used to go down there and plunk around on it, and, you know, it's like the process started very early, where as soon as I knew one song, I was writing my own song based on that, you know, which I think what we all do as songwriters, like you learn a song, you learn tricks, you learn tools, and then you make it your own. And, you know, my earliest days were plunking on the piano and reworking Mary Had a Little Lamb and Heart and Soul into like my own little riddles and songs. And as I became a teenager and got into punk rock, I started writing like punk rock lyrics to like Indigo Girls sounding melodies.
Wow. I've always kind of thought that punk and folk are kind of hand in hand, almost the same thing, different intensity. And so you maybe just bridge that gap right off the get go.
Totally. I think a lot of people in my generation are, you know what, like once I, like in my high school, I was kind of one, I felt, you know, like a, not outcast, but like different, you know, that I was like a punk rock folky. But then once, you know, you go to college or you find your scene, then it's like, oh, there's a bunch of people who were punk rock folkies,
right.
You know, this is like a thing. We were all the one in our high school, and then we all found each other right. After, you know.
And you knew Billy Strings, you guys kind of met in Michigan, is that right? And kind of run in the same circles.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. And then you moved to Nashville and then ended up living basically as neighbors with Billy Strings and Molly Tuttle. And
yeah, uh-huh. He hit me up and was like, I'm thinking about going to Denver or Nashville. And I had already been living in Nashville for a year. And I was like, dude, you gotta come to Nashville. It's like all our heroes are here. You know, you can be picking with Tim O'Brien in someone's living room on a Tuesday.
Right.
And it's regular stuff in Nashville. And he was like, all right, well, I'm gonna put a bird in your ear to listen for if anybody needs a roommate or anything. You know, because you're going to need a place to stay. And somebody, my next door neighbor, came out of her house at 2 a.m. one day, and I happened to be walking out onto my porch, and she was like, hey, just want to let you know this house can become available and if you want to keep it in the family. And I was like, all right. Called up Bill, and I was like, hey, got your house. So it was cool. We had a little compound there for a while.
Nice. I bet that was a good street to live on for some jams.
Yeah.
And so he worked with you on the tune Nothing's Working. Tell us about that song.
Yeah, we started it in his dining room there, and we were talking about people in our towns that where we grew up, who, you know, it's like they do their best, they're always trying their best, make all the right decisions, and hold their own, and do the right thing, and they still kind of end up with nothing to show for it because they're just stuck in a scene that's not really good for them or meant for them. And so we wrote the first verse, and then it kind of stayed there for a while. His mom called, and we ended up, you know, that's like a tangent on another thing. But, you know, it sat for a couple of years, and then I was on my way to the Jeff Austin tribute in Denver, and I was just feeling heavy, thinking about, you know, the reason for the occasion, and I had found out that week that I had also lost my cousin Emily, who's a few years younger than me, and we think it was probably an overdose situation, framed as a car accident, kind of a bizarre situation, but just, you know, feeling the weight of that, of those two things, and thinking about people in my life who I still got, you know, and worry about, and put together the rest of the lyrics basically between those two plane rides from Canada to Denver and then to the Iron Mountain, Upper Peninsula, Michigan. And then got together with Billy on my front porch, and by the time we'd finished the, you know, me singing my lyrics to him playing through it, once through, I felt like this, you know, the song was complete now. We had a song instead of just a seed of a song. And he left my porch, and I finished two other songs that I had started before, like in the days before the pandemic hit. I was supposed to have like a month at home alone to write, and then the pandemic hit, and Josh came home, and the world went upside down, and I couldn't finish those two songs till that day. I like basically finished three songs that day, and I felt like this record was just ready to come through me, and not everything in my life was ready to fall apart the way it needed to in order for me to move through what I needed to move through. And yeah.
So on that song in particular, and then some others on that album, I just sense a lot of compassion and empathy that's coming through there that might've come from that time. And then I read that you'd studied medicine in college, and that you decided to do that because you'd seen some people and how they were treated in the medical field. Tell us kind of about that, because it seems to kind of dovetail in with some of the compassion that I'm hearing on this album.
Yeah, well, there's some mental health things in my family, and time in the psych ward, and just seeing, you know, how overworked the doctors are, and how little time they're able to actually spend with the patients, and just sort of the state of affairs there. It's pretty intense, and you know, this was all happening from the time I was in fourth grade through high school. So that had a big impact on me, and you know, we were talking about, you know, in eighth grade they give you those aptitude tests. And all my life I wanted to be a singer until I got to eighth grade, and it seemed like the world was telling me, you know, being a singer is like, it's not really a job. Like, pick a real job, and you can sing, but, you know, pick a real job. And so I thought, well, I love math and science. I see a need here. This is the route I'm going to go. So I went to college, got a degree in human biology and bioethics and Spanish, and was pre-med. But basically met the flat bellies while I was in college, and found bluegrass, found basically my musical family away from home. And that really put me on my path. I remembered, it was like I woke up from the discourse that I had been subject to in those days. And I was like, oh yeah, I am a singer. This is what I am. I'm an artist. This is my purpose here, you know? And, you know, I was like my junior year of college when I met them, finishing my human biology degree. And so I just like picked up another bachelor's degree in Spanish so I could stay a year longer and like delay the having to, you know, go to medical school or do the next thing. And just started, I made a record with them, and we started touring, and I was working in a lab studying evolution and plants, and I was making the same almost no money touring as I was working in the lab. So I just, you know, it was sort of a natural transition, and I've been doing nothing but this ever since. So,
well, it seems to be working out for you. You mentioned mental health a little bit, and I just saw something you did for an organization called Backline.
Yeah.
Tell us about Backline.
So Backline is basically making resources for mental health visible for artists and musicians and destigmatizing it and just giving you a place to go. You know, they're putting signs up in green rooms and just letting you know if you need help, this is a place where you can reach out and they will help you find therapists who are used to working with people in this industry and with its unique set of challenges. There's support groups and, you know, yoga classes and just all sorts of resources. If you need to help finding a therapist, they'll set you up with one. If you need help paying for it, they'll try to help you find a grant, you know, and things like this.
I will say that they just recently raised the funding to start a 24-hour help hotline, which is huge. It requires so much money and so much training to the volunteers. But, you know, us musicians have wild hours. So the fact that you can call for help at any time is going to be just an amazing resource.
You can find more information about that at backline.care. So how about another song? What do you guys want to play?
Yeah, well, we'll play you the song that that Nick Forrester chose for me. He curated the What the Night Brings Jeff Austin benefit. Mm. And everyone played Jeff Austin songs except me. He asked me to play one of my own songs, which was... I felt honored, and it also gave this song forever now to me a new meaning and a new context, and, you know, adding my grandma's voice and her story that I added later on in the record, it gave even more context for this song and its place on the record.
Great. So what's this one? This is
this one's called On Your Side, or parenthetically Starman. And actually that night, the lyrics used to be, you can be the storm and the lightning in the sky. And Mike Robinson was like, what is that? What are you saying that you can be the star man? And I was like, yes. That's going to be the lyric and maybe even the name of the song now.
Neat.
Yeah.
One, two, three. You can take it easy now. You can rest your mind. We're not going anywhere. Time is on our side. You can be the star and the lightning in the sky. I will be a shelter, 'cause I am on your side. And trouble is a pretty word wrapped around your little finger. You said it hoping I would linger just a little longer. Fire is a coward, hiding in the smoke. She came in and you woke. Just a little stronger. You can take it easy now, you can rest your mind. We're not going anywhere, time is on our side. You can be the star and the lightning in the sky. I will be a shelter, 'cause I on your side. It's not gonna be how you thought it would. That don't mean it won't be good. You're not lost just 'cause you wander. Pour yourself a drink, take a turn out on the dance floor. What else could you ask for? This love, it can't be conquered. And you can take it easy. We're not going anywhere. Time is on our side. You can be the storm and the lightning in the sky. I will be a shelter, 'cause I am on your side. Oh, going anywhere. Time is on our side. You can be the star, man, the lightning in the sky. I will be a shelter, cause I am on your side.
That was On Your Side. Starman Lindsay Liu is my guest in a JPR live session today. Find the information at lindsayliumusic.com. So Queen of Time came out with some major events in your life and some self-exploration. What was kind of going on at that time? You touched on it a little earlier.
I've been saying, you know, in the pandemic, seemed like almost everyone either got a puppy, had a baby, got married, or got divorced. And I didn't get a puppy, or have a baby, or get married.
All right. So?
I was like, I called my mom in college, and I was like, Mom, I crashed the car. I did one of the three things. I crashed the car, I spent last night in jail, or I got my lip pierced. And she was like, aw, you got your lip pierced. No, I separated from my husband and longtime bandmate, and I lost my maternal grandmother, who was really the only grandparent that I had for most of my life. My dad's parents died when I was really young, so she was like my elder. She was my sort of guide, and I felt a real special relationship with her. As one of her 100 grandchildren, I had a really special relationship with her. And so losing her was pretty big, and I had luckily collected her entire life story over the course of 27 hours of phone conversations, and I chose two of those to include in the record, just to sort of include her for posterity. She gives context to my life and to my work, and it really. It really added a lot to the record.
And there's a lot of her spoken word, especially in the song Love Calls. So talk about that song a little bit.
Well, I had written that song with another longtime bandman of mine, PJ George. And I don't know, there was a lot of jam space on it. And, you know, we had the basic track and we left a lot of that space open. And I was playing it for a couple of my girlfriends. And they were like, "Oh, we want more Lou in this spot," and I thought, "Well, what version of Lou do we want?" You know, and I realized that it was the version of me that was interested in my grandma and her life story, as a way of, you know, knowing where I came from in order to know who I am, and also just her story is so radical and righteous that you know, like I said, it really sort of laid the foundation in a big way for my worldview and the way I see things. And I liked the first line is actually, you know, she's got a light that can launch 1,000 ships. Mm-hmm. There's this nice sort of maternal line there, because I woke up one day at my parents' house in my nightgown. I came downstairs and my mom, she was like, "Lindsay, you've got a face that could launch 1,000 ships." And I was like, "What is that? That is like the most beautiful thing I ever heard." And I sort of amended it. I didn't know that was a phrase in the right. Popular vernacular from Joan of Arc or whatever.
Right.
But I claimed it anyway. I stole it, and I like to think about my grandma, and you know she one of her stories that she told me that I had heard before too is when she was in Mexico. She went to Mexico with her three youngest children, with no money, in a van, just to show them that you don't need wealth to survive. That, you know, the world provides, basically. You know, one of the people that she that had sort of taken her under the wing on her journeys in one of the towns, she found herself alone with him one night, and he went to make a pass at her, and she didn't. He spoke Spanish and she spoke English, and they didn't really speak each other's languages. And she just sort of put up her hand and she said, "Mi amor es Dios, de Dios." You know, she said, put it together as good as she could with her Spanish, basically, that, you know, that my love that you feel is the love of God and not a romantic love.
Right.
And, you know, she had a very intense and extreme embodiment of spirituality. And she said it just stopped him in his tracks, you know, and from then on, their relationship was very clear and understood. And you know, I didn't know that in the tarot deck, the Queen of Swords is referred to as the Queen of Time. But that describes my grandma so beautifully. And I think of her when I sing that line, you know, I'm a woman in a woman's body, and man, I notice you noticing. You know, this whole just like being able to like own your power and without any sort of shying away from it or feeling shame in it or feeling any fear in it, just like totally being in your power and in your body. That was my grandma. And just recently I've looked a little more deeply into the Queen of Swords as an archetype. And the Queen of Swords as an archetype is all about just having a really beautiful and powerful hold on your communication of your needs, you know, and being, you know, not needing to have your feelings as understood as much as you need your needs to be understood. Obviously, there's a lot of gray area there. Sometimes one leads to the other. Like, you need your feelings to be understood. That could be your need. But she was just really, you know, I just never met somebody so firmly capable of communicating her needs and, you know, not at all, like, I don't know, she was almost like stone cold, you know what I mean? Like, she didn't feel anxious, she didn't feel afraid of anything, literally. Yeah, she just, like, really so strongly believed that she had the power of the Holy Spirit on her side, and you know, if it was her time, it was her time. Right. And she just trusted everyone and loved everyone and took everyone in. You know, I really think of her in every one of these songs, including that last one. I think about Jeff and I think about my grandma and how she was a shelter for everyone. She had homeless shelters. She dumpster dove to provide for the homeless shelters. You know, you can see why I was so interested in collecting her story anyway.
Yeah, she sounds quite remarkable.
Yeah. So she is the Queen of Time. She is the light that could launch a thousand ships. She is the shelter. You know, she is everywhere throughout this record. And, you know, when I told her that Josh and I were parting or getting a divorce, she was like, "Oh, I thought that happened last November. I thought that was last fall." It was like,
wow.
She was like, she was a step ahead of me already, you know?
Wow.
There's a part of the record there where you can hear her talking me through my having a nervous breakdown just preparing to lose her, and I, you know, had that to her because I could ask her anything, I could say anything to her, she was like a rock, you know, and I was like, what am I gonna do when you're gone and I need you and I need guidance or I need to ask a question, you're the only one that can help me. And you listen to the record and hear what she says, it's very applicable to anyone who's ever lost anyone that they loved. So anyway, she's the Queen of Time, and that's the song we're going to play for you next.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I do want to hear that song. You also, in some of your discussions and some of your self-exploration, you have come upon something you're calling the divine feminine. What is, explain that a little bit. And is your grandma kind of fit into that a little bit as well? Is that?
I didn't understand what that was. And I had this DMT trip that set me on a course to find out. And Yeah, and I remember calling her up and telling her about what I was learning and what I was finding out, and she was just like, yeah, that don't make sense. That's fine. You know, like, she wasn't about to start calling God her or anything.
Right.
She was like, that's cool. I think that's great. I have no qualms with that.
Right.
You know, I guess there's a tie there between just my understanding myself. You know, this next song, Queen of Time, also is really, it came out of the sort of Alice in Wonderland, the dream asking, your own dream asking yourself to claim who you are, you know? And, you know, just being able to see that, to see that disparity between genders, you know, to see that as a man, you've been hearing the divine referred to in masculine terms. That's in our culture. That's what we've all been hearing. And so I think that does sort of have an impact on your identity and your confidence and your so many different things, you know, not just biological, but cultural. I think that might play I think that plays a role in it. And so as a woman, to sort of see that for what it is and to see that, oh, I've been thinking about divinity as of something outside of myself, as something that I'm separate from, you know, that I have a place in the divine was sort of like, you know, it was mind expanding on the psychedelic level, as you can imagine.
And probably kind of empowering on a lot of others as well.
Very empowering, yeah. Very empowering. And I went through all these sort of stages of grief with that too. You know, I've had a lot of frustration with it at the beginning and anger. And then, you know, that sort of transforms, like the process of grief works, you know, and I read this book by Simone Kidd called The Dance of the Dissonant Daughter, where she goes through her own journey of, you know, from traditional Christianity to understanding divinity through the lens of femininity. And I really connected with a lot of what she was saying, but I also sort of had to go through it on my own timeline. You know, like, it took me longer to move through the phases than it did for me to read the book.
Yeah.
But, you know?
Yeah.
But that has also impacted my work as an artist and as a person a lot, you know?
All right. Well, let's hear that song then. Let's hear Queen of Time.
What a thrill it is to not be needed. What a drag it is to be all thrills. I'm a wishing well, I'm a wishing well, well, well. Check it out. Thank you.
Queen of Time. Lindsay Liu is my guest in a JPR live session. That's the title track to her latest album, Queen of Time. So thanks so much for being with us, Heather. Thank you. Michelle, thank you. Mimi, thank you. Lindsay, thank you so much.
Yeah.
Good luck on the rest of your tour. You can find out more information at lindsayliumusic.com. JPR Live Sessions are engineered by John Griffin of Luna Zen Studios. And this JPR Live Sessions made possible with support from the Talent Club with cold drinks and live music in a casual atmosphere in downtown Talent. Find their live music schedule at talentclublive.com and stick around for more open air next.